first boys and girls will be invited to have their parents listen in for some mortgage information from the sponsor. And you'll also have J. Edgar Hoover, none other than J. Edgar Hoover, involved indirectly because he thought this was the best dramatic show on radio. This Is Your FBI, which was on from 1945 to 1953 with the blessing of the Bureau. And tonight, we have a woman paid off for a liquidated fiancé in The Big Guy. It's This Is Your FBI from May 14, 1948.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. Tonight's FBI file, The Big Guy.
History has a way of repeating itself, of forming a pattern which recurs at almost regular intervals. For that reason, anyone studying the field of crime today must go back and study the happenings after World War I. There began a rising tide of crime with the coming of peace in 1918, even as there is a rising crime wave today. Criminals banded together and formed what used to be called gangs. The men were identified by the now almost outworded gangsters. But if the word is outmoded, the methods of operation are not. And today, one of the biggest problems facing every law enforcement agency like your FBI is the potential return of the mobs. The crime wave can be fought, and fought successfully if the formation of new interlocking groups of criminals can be prevented. Once the ranks are formed, fighting the war against criminals is more difficult, because arresting an underling does not impair the effectiveness of the mob, does not destroy the leader, the man on top. Tonight's file opens in a small apartment in the midtown section of a large eastern city. A short, stubby man is removing his shirt as he talks to a newly arrived visitor.
Sorry you had to wait for me, Charlie. I had to go down to the drugstore to get this stuff.
What is it?
It's for mosquito bites. I'm covered with them.
Yeah, I can see them.
You want to rub some of the stuff on my back, Charlie?
Sure.
Oh, I hope it works. This itch is driving me crazy.
How's that feel?
Oh, great. Get some on my neck, will you?
Okay. How'd the trip go?
Well, can't you see the condition I'm in? What a trip. Brother, that's the last time I leave this town.
Here. A little right here?
Yeah, right there. The first thing is the train. It's old, it's hot, and it's dirty. Then to make it worse, I draw an old guy sitting next to me who beeps to the conductor when I light a cigar. Can't smoke all the way up.
Oh, fine.
Then I get up there, walk 3 miles to the river. I find a spot behind some weeds and a little clearing.
Mm-hmm.
For 3.5 hours I wait, just sitting there. I was chewed by mosquitoes, bees, and every other bug in the book.
Yeah. I guess that does it.
Thanks.
Lou show up?
Yeah, finally.
What happened?
Came down the river in a canoe. When he was maybe 15 feet away, I let go with both barrels.
He's dead?
Natch.
I'll tell George. He'll be glad Mr. Lou Dillon is out of the way.
Look, when you see George, tell him any time he wants somebody else knocked off, he should please make it indoors.
Next morning, at the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is standing in front of the teletype machines reading an incoming message when Agent Don Conway approaches.
Jim?
Hmm? Oh, hello, Don. Oh. I knew you'd come up.
There's a girl named Ann Whitman waiting for you at your desk.
You talked to her?
No, she said she wanted to see you.
I called her the other day about Lou Dillon. He's the fellow who violated his federal parole.
Oh?
She's his girl.
Did she know where Dillon was?
No, not specifically. She said that he'd gone hunting someplace upstate.
How long ago?
Last week. She said she'd get in touch with us if she heard from him.
Maybe she has some information now.
Could be. Come on.
Dillon's the man who was sent away for being a lookout on a bank robbery, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. was his first conviction, and from what he said, his first crime.
Yeah. You made the arrest, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I thought at the time that Dillon was a nice young fellow who'd gone wrong because of circumstances.
I remember your report.
He had a good record in prison. Still in all, after his good record, he's run away. Oh, Don, you'd better stick around while I talk to Miss Whitman.
Huh? Okay.
Miss Whitman, sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Taylor.
This is Mr. Conway.
We met unofficially a few minutes ago.
Oh, yes, hello.
Have you heard from Lou Dillon, Miss Whitman?
No, sir. But I had a call about an hour ago from the chief of police of a town upstate named Centerville.
What did he want?
Well, he said that one of his men found a canoe in an upstate park. There was a hole in the bottom of it that looked like a shotgun hole. They identified the canoe as one that Lou had been using on his hunting trip.
And was there any trace of Dillon?
No, sir. They're afraid something's happened. Something serious.
How did the police happen to call you?
Well, they said Lou was staying at a lodge, and when he was reported missing, they went there and looked through his papers. They found my name on a letter.
I thought you told me you didn't know where Dillon went.
Well, this wasn't a letter I wrote to him, Mr. Taylor. This was one he was going to send to me.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Do you think that something serious has happened to him, Mr. Taylor?
Well, Miss Whitman, that's difficult to judge. Tell me, do you know of any enemies he had? Anyone who might want to harm him?
Well, no.
It might be one of the men he was in prison with, Jim.
That's possible, Don. Miss Whitman, did the police tell you where the canoe was found?
Yes, I think they said Franklin National Park.
If they did, then that's our case, Jim.
That's right. Don, I think we'd better start investigation on this right away.
Yes?
Mr. Blair, to see you.
Send him right in.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Miss Williams, hold all calls for the next 10 minutes. I don't want to be disturbed.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. Medford.
Come in, Charlie.
Okay. Well, glad to see you back.
Thanks. It's good to be back, Charlie.
How was the trip?
Very tiring. I covered 10 cities in 10 days.
Hey, did you do any good?
Well, some things were accomplished, but they didn't come easy. You know, Charlie, I wish that some of the people who think that criminal activities are a soft touch could work alongside of me for a week. I think that they'd have found out that those of us who deal in larceny have to work twice as hard for our illicit dollars.
You can say that again. I've been tempted many times myself to turn legit.
Yeah. Freddy get back?
Yeah, he came in yesterday, covered with mosquito bites. He was really steamed about being sent to the country.
Was he successful?
Oh, yeah. Everything went fine.
I'm almost sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Well, you're the one who wanted Lou Dillon knocked off.
Yes, I know. But I was rather fond of that young man.
Then why did you want to see him get it?
For business reasons. He could have gotten us in trouble.
How?
Well, when he was released from prison, he decided to go straight. That made him too big a risk. He knew too much about us.
Oh.
Didn't I hear that he planned to get married?
Yeah, next month.
Probably be quite a blow to the girl. You know her, Charlie?
No. Freddie does.
Well, have Freddie pay a call on her and, you know, bring her some cash. That might make things a bit easier.
Okay.
Oh, and tell Freddie that he's got a bonus coming for killing Dillon.
A bonus?
Yeah. 2 weeks in the country.
Oh, brother, that's a slow train from Centerville.
I know. Did you see the chief of police?
Yes, by the time I got there, he had already had part of the river dragged.
Find anything?
Well, no trace of Dillon's body, if that's what you mean.
How about anything else?
Well, they found Dillon's rifle, and it hadn't been fired.
Well, that removes any question of suicide.
Now, we knew before we found the rifle that it wasn't suicide, Don.
How?
Well, the canoe was found downstream.
So?
An examination of it showed that the blast which ripped a hole through it had been fired from the outside.
It still could have been an accident.
Oh, this wasn't any accident, Don.
Well, how do you know?
Well, we've got evidence. Along the bank of the river, at approximately the same place Dillon's gun was picked up, there were indications that someone may have been lying in wait for him. There was a small area of beaten-down grass where someone had been sitting, and sitting quite a long time, too. There were 17 cigarette butts strewn around. We also found footprints leading to this spot and away from it.
I hope they were good enough for impressions.
Yes, they were.
The lab ought to be able to give us some help on this one.
Well, I sent in the cigarette butts and the footprint data on the way up here.
Any idea when we'll get a report?
Well, we went right to work on it.
Jim, does Lou Dillon's girl know about these latest developments?
Yes, I notified her. You know, this case started out to be a simple federal parole violation, Don.
Yeah.
And the way it looks now, it's murder.
Just a moment.
Hello, Ann.
Oh, hello, Fred.
Can I come in?
Yes, come ahead.
I hope you don't mind my dropping by like this.
Oh, I know.
I had a reason for coming. I just don't know how to say it, I guess.
About Lou, you mean?
Yeah, I just heard about it. It's real tough, Ann. Lou was a great little guy.
Fred, please don't say was. There's still hope that he'll be found.
Oh, sure, sure. What I meant was, well, everybody liked the guy.
I know.
You and him were, I mean, planning to get married, right?
Yes.
Well, I got something for you. It's sort of like a wedding present, I guess. Here, you take it, Ann.
Fred, what is this?
Take it.
But I...
Honey, it's dough, a real nice bundle of dough.
What?
Here, look.
What? I don't understand. Fred, why should you give
me... I ain't giving it to you. It's from a guy me and Lou both have worked for.
Who is he?
Well, he don't want his name brought in. Just compliments of a friend.
Fred, I can't take this.
Huh?
I sound ungrateful, I know, and I'm sure the man means well, but I can't possibly accept it.
Honey, that's $500.
Just take it back, Fred, and tell the man thanks.
Well, okay.
And thanks to you, too, for stopping by.
Oh, don't mention it. I'll be seeing you, honey.
Get back in, sir. Huh? You heard me.
No.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's file, which shows how your FBI protects American citizens in American homes. Now a word about another type of home protection. Protection against mortgage foreclosure. A plan which not only safeguards the homeowner during his lifetime, but also continues to protect his widow if he should die. Here is what happens. It's the Equitable Society representative holding an envelope in his hand. He says...
Good morning, Mrs. Rogers. I thought I'd bring these over personally. Here's the canceled mortgage on your home, all paid up. And here's a check from the Equitable Society. It covers all the payments your husband made to reduce the principal of the mortgage during his lifetime.
Sounds almost too good to be true, doesn't it? But this is exactly what happens in the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan, which combines a low-cost first mortgage with special life insurance protection. Under this plan, the widow doesn't inherit a mortgage. She inherits a home that's hers free and clear. What's more, every dollar previously paid under the plan to reduce the mortgage is returned to her. If the plan has been in operation for a number of years, this payment will amount to a very considerable sum of money.
In addition, this Equitable plan protects the home against another great hazard, hard times.
The Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan accomplishes this through a special cash fund which is built up during the owner's lifetime. This fund is always ready for use if sickness or unemployment threaten home security. As the mortgage shrinks, the cash fund increases. For example, it can be used to pay off a 20-year mortgage in approximately 15 years.
Last but not least, the mortgage interest is only 4%, and there's a liberal allowance to cover title search, lawyer's fees, and other closing costs.
So, all in all, a man is very fortunate if his health, age, income, home, and its location qualify him for an equitable, assured home ownership plan. The way to find out if you qualify is to get in touch with your Equitable Society representative. Look in the phone book or write care of this station to the Equitable Society.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now back to tonight's FBI file, The Big Guy.
One of the many shocking things about the tremendous segment of our population confined in the prisons of the nation is that more than 50% of those persons are in prison for at least the second time. Some of them have been returned more than a dozen times. Somewhere there is an answer to why there is more than an even chance that anyone who is sentenced to prison for the first time will ultimately be returned to prison after his release. Possibly part of the answer lies in the fact that the public will not accept an ex-convict into its midst. There are many firms which will not hire a man who has done time. There are some communities which will not allow him to live within their confines. Not every ex-convict wants to lead a perfectly law-abiding life after his release from prison. Some of them are bitter at their treatment by society and want only to inflict revenge. But there are some who honestly want to lead a normal, useful life and to forget the past. It is our duty, the duty of every one of us, to make those men welcome in our ranks and to give them a chance to prove themselves useful members of society. Tonight's file continues at the apartment of Ann Whitman.
Lou. Oh, Lou, darling, this is so wonderful. I just can't believe it. I can't believe you're really here.
I'm here, honey.
Lou, everybody thought you were dead.
Lou, where were you? What happened?
It's kind of a long story.
Look, I know you two want to be alone.
Now, wait a minute. I want you to hear the story, too.
But I have to get back.
Sit down. Listen.
Okay.
What did you hear about me, Ann? What story did you get?
Well, your canoe was found, and there was a shotgun hole in it. Local police reported you missing.
Uh-huh.
And then the FBI investigated. They found evidence that someone was waiting for you, that it wasn't an accident, but someone had shot and killed you.
They were right, Ann. All but the part about being killed.
Someone did shoot you?
Yeah.
Who?
You want to answer that, Freddy?
Huh?
Do you want to tell her who shot me?
How would I know?
I saw you through the weeds, just before you pulled the trigger.
Me?
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, no.
That's it. Would you pick up his gun, honey?
Yes, sure.
You got anything we can use to tie him up?
Well, I don't have any rope.
Can I use that extension cord?
Oh, sure.
I want to be sure we keep him here after he comes to.
Lou, did Freddy really try to kill you?
Yeah.
But why? You were friends.
He was just taking orders.
From who?
The big guy.
Who's he?
The guy I used to work for.
But why should he?
I'm playing it straight, honey. I guess the big guy didn't like that. So he tried to take care of me.
How awful.
He almost did it, too.
What did happen, Lou?
Well, I saw Fred just as he was going to shoot, and I ducked away a little. Only got hit in the shoulder.
Oh.
The canoe went over, and I went underwater and came up some distance downstream. I guess Fred figured he'd really finished me.
Well, why didn't you go back to your lodge?
I knew they'd come after me again. I went to a cabin downstream. An old trapper lived in it. He took care of me until I felt well enough to leave. There, that ought to hold him. You better keep that gun on him anyway, though, just in case.
Lou, where are you going?
I got a call to make.
To the police?
No, not yet. I've got to see the big guy first. When I see the police, I want him to be with me.
Special Agent Conway speaking.
Hello, Don.
Oh, Jim. Where are you?
I'm up in Centerville. I've got some good news, Don. Yeah. Lou Dillon is still alive.
What? How do you know?
I just interviewed an old trapper who has a cabin about 5 miles downstream from where the accident occurred. He said that Dillon stayed with him after he'd been shot.
Well, why didn't he notify the police?
Well, Dillon asked him not to. He claimed it was just a hunting accident.
Where's Dillon now?
He left there earlier today.
Any idea where he's headed?
The trapper believes he said something about going to see his girl.
Oh, this was early today?
That's right.
Well, if that's his destination, he should be at her place by now.
Just about. Oh, Don, has anything come in from the lab yet?
They just called. They'll have all the information for us in about an hour.
Good. Now, look, I'm flying down. I'll go right to Miss Whitman's from the airport. I'll meet you there.
Dillon? Just a minute. Oh, hello, Mr. Taylor. Come in.
Thanks.
Mr. Conway just got here. He's with Fred Hall.
Fred Hall?
Hello, Jim.
Oh, hi, Don.
This is Fred Hall, Jim. And according to Miss Whitman, Hall is the one who shot Dillon.
Lou got here just in time to catch him and tie him up.
I see. And where is Dillon?
Miss Whitman said he went to see someone called the Big Guy.
Hmm?
He believes he's the person who ordered Hall to shoot him.
Who is the Big Guy, Hall?
I don't know what she's talking about.
You don't know anybody called the Big Guy?
Never heard of him.
Lou said he wanted to get him and bring him into the police.
Well, that was foolish. Don, let's take Hall down to the office. We'll question him there.
Hello, Mr. Medford.
Lou. Lou Dillon.
That's right. I didn't bother to announce myself. Do you mind?
Well, where did you come from? I thought...
I know. You thought I was dead. I'm afraid Fred gave you a bum steer.
Fred? Well, what do you mean?
Oh, look, don't go into any act. I know the whole deal.
Lou, I don't know what you're talking about.
Fred Hall tried to kill me, Mr. Medford. And you ordered the job. I know this because I just left Fred.
But I haven't seen Fred Hall in 6 months, Lou.
Suppose you tell that to the cops, huh?
Cops?
That's what I came here for, to bring you to headquarters.
Lou, look, I honestly don't know what this is all about. Obviously, you're under a strain of some sort. It appears to have stimulated your imagination. Now, why don't you be a good boy and go home and get some rest?
I'm not leaving here without you.
That's what you think, kid.
Huh?
Thank you, Charlie.
Hall, the last time you were arrested, you were picked up with a man named Charlie Blair. Is Blair the big guy?
I don't know anybody by that name.
Don, I think we've got some ammunition now to use on Mr. Hall.
Did you get something in the lab?
Yes. Hall, listen to this report. It should interest you. Item one. There were 17 cigarette butts found in one spot on the bank of the river where Dillon was shot.
What's that got to do with me?
Well, the laboratory says that the person who smoked those cigarettes has type AB blood. They determined this by analyzing the saliva. The blood test you took a little while ago showed your type matches this.
What does that prove?
AB is a reasonably rare type of blood.
Still don't prove I shot Dillon, does it?
No, it doesn't. Item two. The lab states that footprints found at this ambush were made by a man approximately 5'8" tall, weighing about 170 pounds.
You get that kind of stuff from a footprint?
That's right. Once the laboratory knows how long a stride that person takes and how deep his footprint went...
That still don't prove I did it.
Granted. Item three. Item three was a sample of ground at the scene of the crime. This was analyzed by the lab. From it, they could tell you were there.
How?
Recognize these shoes, huh?
Yeah, they're mine. Where'd you get them?
We got a search warrant. We found them in your apartment.
Have they been to the lab yet, Jim?
Yes. And the report shows that the sample of earth I brought in matches the mud on these shoes.
So what? A lot of guys have shoes with mud on them.
Not that mud, Hall. There isn't another place in the country where you'd find dirt of this exact composition.
I'd say that report proves that you were by the river.
Paul, we've got enough here to have a federal attorney get a conviction. An attempted murder is the same as actual murder. Now, do you want to take this all alone? Do you want to go to jail for life? Do you want to let the man who gave you the orders go free? Start talking.
He's out, Mr. Medford. Real cold.
Good.
What are we going to do with him?
That's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this time you'd better take care of him yourself.
Okay.
But not in here. It's too messy.
How about the garage?
Well, I'd just as soon he didn't turn up for a while, Charlie.
Suppose I drop him in the river.
Fine.
Shall I move him now?
Yes, take him away. I've got some work to finish.
Okay. Use your freight elevator, huh?
Yes.
He's kind of heavy. Would you open the door?
Oh, sure.
Put him down, Blair.
What? Go ahead, Jim. I've got them both covered.
Who are you?
We're special agents of the FBI, Medford. We came here for you and Blair.
Dillon's unconscious, Jim, but still breathing.
That's good, but it still doesn't change the charge. You two are still being arrested for attempted murder.
Charles Blair, George Medford, and Fred Hall were tried in a federal court for attempted murder on government reservation. All three men were sentenced to life imprisonment. And thus, a vicious machine of crime and corruption was broken up by your FBI. It is true that two special agents made the actual arrests in tonight's case. But the evidence from which the convictions were obtained came from the laboratory of your FBI. The laboratory which serves as the unsung hero in a great percentage of cases. As recently as 1932, there was one man in the FBI lab, and he had one microscope with which to work. Today, there are more than 300 trained scientists who examine evidence, who last year examined more than 104,000 pieces of evidence. Those reports helped your FBI to prove the guilt of a great many criminals, and thus helped the Federal Bureau of Investigation protect its employer, you, the American people.
In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI. Friends, if you were impressed a few minutes ago by what I told you about the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan, if the idea appeals to you of a low interest rate first mortgage combined with life insurance to protect your home against death and hard times, then I suggest that you get in touch with your Equitable representative soon. He'll show you exactly what this plan will do for you personally, how much money it can save you, how much added security it will give you. So contact your Equitable Society representative without delay, or write care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will dramatize another exciting case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The dramatic story of a manhunt through a flaming forest. Its subject, a prison break. Its title, The Curious Prospectors.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Curious Prospectors on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Lou comes back, after all, from a supposedly fatal crime, a supposedly fatal canoe ambush set up by the big guy, and the lab gets the conviction of the shooter. It's the lab that so often breaks the case. And that was the story tonight in The Big Guy, This Is Your FBI, from May 14, 1948. We'll see how it plays out for the Whistler's story, The Girl Next Door, right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Alma Germain is no longer a congenial actress, and she declines a part even though that she needs the money because she's about to become Mrs. Neil Roberts, and his sister knows why. Well, she finds some dirt, the sister does, and dies for it in a nice clean place, namely the pool. That's just the premise for The Girl Next Door, tonight's tale from The Whistler, which comes to us from August 20th, 1947.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated by independent research the most popular West Coast program in radio history.
And Signal gasoline is top, too. Tops in quality. It takes extra quality, you know, to give you extra mileage. And Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline.
So look for the Signal circle sign in yellow and black that identifies friendly dealer-owned Signal service stations from Canada to Mexico. And now the Whistler's
strange story. The Girl Next Door.
It was, in a small but very special way, a moment of triumph for Alma Germain. On the surface, of course, the matter was pretty small and unimportant. Nothing to compare with 10 years ago, when she was a national celebrity, when her every move was recorded faithfully the next morning in syndicated columns, to be read and appreciated by 30 million movie fans. But the satisfaction, the rising warm feeling inside was there. And Alma smiled across the black ebony desk at the puzzled face of Oscar Dahl, the producer, leaned back in the Chinese red leather sofa and flicked an ash into an onyx tray at her elbow.
Alma, honey, maybe I'm subnormal this morning, but I'd swear I heard you say...
I simply don't want the part, Oscar. Is there anything so puzzling about that?
You don't want the part.
I don't want the part, period.
Mind if I ask why?
Should be very simple, Oscar. 6 months ago, you gave me a dozen good reasons why I should never act again.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I retired at the top 7 years ago while I was the girl next door.
Known and loved from Maine to California. Yes, I know. But I told you this part has nothing to do with the girl next door. This is a mature role. You're not an ingenue any longer, my dear. You're somebody's mother. And don't tell me you sat in a dark corner for 6 months and came to a reasonable conclusion, because I know better. Nobody, get it? Nobody in this crazy town had more genuine reverence for a fast dollar than Alma Germain. There's only one reason you turned down $2,500 a week.
Oh?
Somebody's made a better offer, and I think I know who.
Who?
Neil Roberts.
You're guessing, dear.
You deny it?
Well, not exactly. What makes you think it's Neil?
Observation, my dear Watson. Ooh. I've seen you out with the guy. He's as dull as they come, but he's got money and runs a newspaper. When I add that to the fact that your stone broke, I smell orange blossoms and hear the wedding march from the distance.
What makes you think I'm broke? Detective.
Surprise, honey?
What do you mean, detective?
A private eye, Neil's sister, hired a month ago. She's around asking questions about your background.
She's got her nerve.
Oh, she's got more than that, Angel. Whether you know it or not, she owns that newspaper her brother operates, watches him like a hawk. Gives him the go-ahead before he ever makes a move.
She has nothing to say about whom he married.
Oh, you just don't know Louise Roberts. If you ask me, honey, I don't think she'd like you for a sister-in-law. Now, If you act sensibly and take this job I'm offering you for a solid $2,500 a week for the run of the picture... Well, after all, there are other actresses in town.
Then by all means, find yourself one, Arthur. I told you I'm through with pictures.
Are you through with those cars and that 15-room house and the swimming pool?
Of course not.
Okay, Alma. It's too bad, though, this part was made for you. And I hate to say it, honey, but I think you'll find the role of Mrs. Neil Roberts a little bit tougher to play.
Alma, do you mean it?
Of course I do, Neil. Now let's dance, shall we?
Wait a minute. Why, I can't believe it.
Then I'll say it again. I love you very much, darling. And I intend to marry you.
Oh, but the last time I proposed, you said I didn't have a prayer.
I changed my mind, darling. You wore me down.
Oh, is that it? You know, I feel like standing on top of this table and shouting.
Oh, please, don't.
Tell them the girl next door is going to be Mrs. Neil Roberts. Strange, isn't it? To me, at least, you are the girl next door. You know, I think I fell in love with you the first time I stood at my window and saw you over in your garden.
You took your time telling me.
Well, I don't know. I had no idea you'd take me seriously. You were so famous and pretty and...
Well, I made a career of it, darling.
But you were more than that, Alma. I'm aware of it, you know. The real Alma Drumay. The charities, the things you've done for other people.
Yes, sweet Neil. Now, let's dance, shall we?
Dance? Oh, but I've got to tell people. I want Louise to know.
Does she have to know, Neil, tonight?
Well, why not? She'll want to talk to you tomorrow, of course.
Yes, of course. Neil, why don't you call Louise? Tell her I'd be delighted to have her over tomorrow afternoon around 3.
Fine.
I know we'll have a lot to talk about. Nice to see you, Louise. Just sit down. I'll ring for tea. Or would you prefer something else?
Nothing, thank you. And I'd rather stand, Alma. Neil tells me you're engaged.
Yes, last night.
Rather sudden, isn't it?
Oh, you think so? He's been proposing for over a year.
And you turned him down until you found yourself up against it, financially. Right?
I suppose your detective told you that.
In a few years, I'm turning full control of the paper over to Neil. That's quite a responsibility. And he'll need a wife who can help him shoulder it. Frankly, Alma, you're not exactly what I had in mind.
Oh? What did you have in mind?
Certainly not a woman 6 years older than he is, who's marrying him for his money.
You've never liked me, have you, Louise?
My personal dislikes don't enter into it. I love my brother, Alma.
Well, he loves me.
He's in love with a shadow. With that wholesome, charitable little character you used to play on the screen. The girl next door.
And you resent that?
I resent hypocrisy. Charities, indeed. Money donated in your name by your gentleman friend.
Listen to me, Louise. You might just as well understand this right now. I will not give Neil up under any circumstances.
I may have something to say about that. I'll find a way to prevent this incredible marriage if it's the last thing I do.
The prologue of The Girl Next Door. The Signal Oil Company is bringing you another strange story by The Whistler. But now a message especially for you drivers who have new cars or expect to be getting one. Just any motor oil won't do, you know, for today's high-efficiency motors. No, sir. They need special protection against corrosion, wear, and carbon if they're to give you the long, trouble-free service you have a right to expect. That's why Signal has brought out a new and finer motor oil, especially created to give modern motors this extra protection. Of course, Signal Premium has 100% pure paraffin base. But in addition, a total of 5 scientific new compounds have been added to Signal Premium motor oil, which by actual test keeps motors 6 times cleaner and reduces cylinder wear 1/3. Get that. Motors actually stay 6 times cleaner, and cylinder wear is reduced 1/3 with Signal Premium Motor Oil. So if you want to keep the performance of your car young, make your next oil change a change for the better. Switch to the new type Signal Oil.
That's your guarantee of a sweeter running motor. Signal Premium Motor Oil. And now back to the Whistler.
Lines are drawn, aren't they, Alma? Louise Roberts knows you're marrying Neil for his money, and she's going to move heaven and earth to prevent it. You feel sure that all the detectives her wealth can hire won't be able to discredit you, won't discover a thing about your carefully concealed past, your life before you became a movie star. You decide to let things lie quietly for a few days, and then, a week later, you drop over to the Roberts home next door, smile pleasantly at Mrs. Ridley, the housekeeper, as she admits you.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Ridley. Oh, Mr. Maine, come in, won't you? Mr. Neal's working up in his study.
Oh, I hear Miss Roberts has gone away.
Yes, till Monday.
Maybe that'll give me a little time with Neil. I've hardly seen him the last few days.
Oh, I know, and I think it's just awful. She's gone out of her way to keep him busy. If you ask me, she's jealous.
Oh, why?
Oh, she's too fond of him to say anything, but the way she looks when he mentions you, like she wanted to... Well, if it was me, I'd marry him right now while she's gone.
Oh, I think I can cope with it.
Well, just the same, I wish for your sake she'd stay in Indiana.
Indiana?
Yes.
Is that where she went?
Well, I thought you knew. Mrs. Ridley, you're sure... Well, I saw the plane ticket.
But why? Why would she go there?
What business? All right, Mr. Lee?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm all right.
Elmer, is that you?
Oh, yes, darling.
Well, you know how it is, dear. That tyrant sister of mine keeps my nose to the grind.
Doesn't she, though?
Ah, but she's an angel. I'm lost without her. Yeah, how about some tea or something, Mrs. Ridley?
Yes, sir. Mr. Maine should use a cup.
Mm-hmm. Now then, darling.
Neil, I want to be married right away.
What? But we plan next month.
Please, let's get married now.
Now?
Tomorrow.
Well, but Louise won't be back till the day after.
It only takes two of us, dear.
Oh, Elmer, I couldn't do that to my sister.
Why, dear? She's taking our marriage so hard. Why prolong it? It could be all over by the time she gets back.
You think it's better?
It's kinder.
Kinder. Well, that's so like you, Elmer.
We can have dinner with Ruth and Jerry, perhaps. Then it won't seem pretty. Tomorrow night we can fly to Yuma.
Well, all right, if you say so.
Neil. Neil, die.
Elmer.
You're such an angel, Neil. You'll never know what you've done for me.
No, Alma. Neil doesn't know what he's done for you. Doesn't realize that there might be some hidden meaning in Louise's sudden trip to Indiana. But you know the meaning of that trip, don't you, Alma? You know exactly what Louise might discover, and exactly how your own position will be threatened if the scandal concerning you and the late James Choate comes to light. And that's why you've made up your mind, Alma, about your marriage to Neil. Louise loves her brother. She'd never spoil his happiness by exposing you. You're counting on that as you rush the plans for the wedding and phone your friend, Ruth Forbes, and begin plans for an informal barbecue out by your swimming pool. And then the following afternoon...
Mr. May?
Yes?
Would you like to check on the table now?
I've finished my swim. Is it 5 o'clock?
Just about, Miss.
Oh, no idea. Toss me that towel, will you, Dora?
Here you are, Miss.
Oh, thanks.
Probably shouldn't have gone for a swim. You know, I'm going to the movies tonight with Mrs. Ridley.
Oh, what's that?
No, Dora, I think that's everything. If the Forbes come before you leave, send them down here.
All right, Miss, I'll come. Dora, where's that lighter you brought? Oh, never mind, Dora, I see it.
Oh, I say, Dora.
It's on, Elmer.
What?
Louise, I didn't know that you...
No one does. I just arrived.
We didn't expect you until...
Late tomorrow. Yes, I know. But it didn't take me long to find what I was looking for in Indiana.
I don't follow you.
No, I followed you. Right from the time you made a mistake in a magazine interview. You mentioned a town in Indiana.
So, of course, you flew right down there, the busy little bee.
I was busy, all right, reading old newspaper files. That's how I learned about James Choate.
Well, what if you did? Well, it was found dead in a burning shack. That doesn't prove anything.
Oh, did I miss something? That isn't what I read at all.
But what?
No, I read about Choate being found in a hospital in a very critical condition. They were trying to contact his wife, a pretty 17-year-old named Alma.
You're lying. He died in that fire. I saw him.
I assume from your agitation that you set the fire.
What are you saying? Jim's dead. You can't prove anything, Louise. You're trying to keep me from Neil, but you can't do it. He'll believe me.
You say Jim's dead. Yes, I suppose he is, in a way.
What do you mean?
He's in a state institution.
He didn't die.
No, Alma. Your husband didn't die.
You haven't told anyone about this. You haven't?
I've told no one.
I'll make some excuse to Neil, I mean. I'll give him up to you if you'll just keep it to yourself.
He'll never quite be all mine again. I can't forgive you for that, Alma.
You don't want a scandal. You know you don't.
What difference does it make now after you've done to me? I'm going to show you up, Alma, tomorrow on page one.
No, you can't do that. I won't let you.
No one lets me, Alma. I do as I please.
No. Do you hear? This is one time you won't.
Alma,
me.
Stop it.
What are you... Alma!
You stand there, Alma, watching at the edge of the pool. The club-ended firelighter clutched in your hand as Louise, stunned by the blow, struggles feebly in the deep water.
Help. Alma, help!
Help me! You're letting me drown!
I hope you do. I want you to drown, Louise. I want you to.
And you don't lift a hand, do you, Alma? As Louise continues her frantic, bewildered effort for a moment, and then sinks below the surface and floats there, a quiet, dark shadow in the pretty blue oval of your pool. And then slowly your blind, unreasoning hatred passes, and something far off wakens you to the danger of your position. The others, Alma, your guests, they've arrived. They'll be coming down here. You're panicky now. Your only thought is to conceal what you've done, to get Louise's body out of sight. You look around wildly. Behind you is the open door of the bathing cabana. With a last shattering effort, you drag the wet, sprawling shape from the pool over to the cabana and thrust it inside. You're slamming the door shut as the others come down the walk.
Hi, darling. Oh, Ruth, Jerry.
Hi, Alma.
Aren't you people early?
Maybe a little. Neil came and got us. He's bringing the drinks down.
Well, darling, what's wrong? You look exhausted. Well, I didn't realize the time. I was swimming, and when I heard you coming...
Say, I wouldn't mind a swim myself. How about you, Ruth?
Oh, love it. Have we time, darling?
Why,
I suppose so. Only, silly of me, but I locked the key inside the cabana. All the suits are in there.
Oh, I have a key. You want to remember? You gave me one so we could use the pool when you're away. I think it's here in my purse.
Look, really, there isn't time. The charcoal's ready. Well, you know how it is with steak.
Yes,
well, here we are, everybody.
Ah.
Poor Tolly.
Well, maybe you could persuade Alma to allow us a swim, Neil.
No, she being selfish.
I think he must have a man locked in the cabana.
Jerry. Oh, don't pay any attention to him, darling. Just a joke. Of course we won't swim if you'd rather not.
Here, have a drink instead.
Oh, thanks, Neil.
And Alma, don't worry about that man in there. Your secret's safe with us.
Well, Alma, for the first time in your life, you have to do some real acting. To be the easy, gracious hostess. And to avoid that questioning look in Neil's eyes. You can't announce the wedding plans now, can you? Secretly, you curse that first wave of panic that blinded you to the easy way out. To the simple fact that it could have looked like an unfortunate accident. But now you can't use that explanation, can you? They'll know the time of death, Alma. The police can determine that. So your removal of the body will point to one thing only, the guilty knowledge of murder. Your desperate purpose now is to get your guests away from here. Make some excuse to send them home so you can think. Finally, you manage it. And as they're leaving, it's Ruth who unknowingly suggests the way out.
I think we're out of this world. Well, so long, Alma.
Good night, Jerry.
Oh, it's been delightful, darling.
Even if we are kicked out at 8:30. But I thought you were going to tell them our big news.
I'm sorry, Neil. I've an awful headache.
Oh, you've certainly been edgy. And what about the big news?
News?
Yes, what's Neil talking about?
What is some other time?
Oh, you've been completely frustrating this evening, darling. Next time I want to swim, I'll use Neil's pool.
Neil's pool? Yes. Neil's pool. It's a good idea.
Oh, she's just being cool, honey. Hey, Neil, you driving us?
We'll be right with you.
Au revoir, darling.
Bye. See you.
Dearest, what is it? Why didn't you tell them about us?
Neil, I was wrong. We can't get married without telling Louise.
But you said...
Yes, I know. But we really should wait. I've thought about it, dear. Now, run along. I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, you think it's best.
I know it is. I want to do the right thing.
Of course you do, Elmo. That's why I love you.
Yes, Alma. Ruth gave you an idea when she mentioned Neil's swimming pool. Neil and Louise's pool right next door. The diving accident story you overlooked before will work now if Louise's body is found there. Just another swimmer dead in the water with a bruise on her head. It's a terrible ordeal, isn't it, Alma? But somehow in the darkness you manage it. Get Louise over to her yard, change her into one of her own swimming suits, and ease her into the water. A short time later, you answer the insistent ringing of your front doorbell.
Why, Mrs. Ridley.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, please come quickly. Something terrible's happened. The police are at our place.
The police?
Yes, it's Miss Roberts. She's dead.
Lieutenant, I don't understand you. If you say it wasn't an accident...
I didn't say for certain that it wasn't an accident, Miss Germaine. Yeah, I'm hardly satisfied. Miss Roberts was a careless sort of woman in dress and so forth?
Certainly not. She was well-groomed and quite correct in everything.
Yes, it is very correct, lady. Went swimming in a sunsuit.
Sunsuit?
That's right. Seems like a little thing, maybe, only it's a masculine kind of mistake.
You're not suggesting that Neil...
I know. They were a devoted brother and sister. No apparent motive at all. Still, Roberts wasn't very definite about where he was around 5 yesterday.
He was calling for Mr. and Mrs. Ford. He brought them over to a party at my home.
Yeah, but he could have killed his sister before he went after them.
We couldn't have... I know he couldn't.
You love him very much, don't you, Miss Chenet?
But it isn't just that. I know because I saw Louise alive.
Saw her?
Yes. She was in her pool swimming. Just before Neil and the others came. Well, she waved over to me.
Oh, and you didn't tell her brother she was home?
Why, it didn't occur to me. I thought he knew.
Well, in that case, Miss Germaine, I won't detain you any longer.
It must have been an accident, Lieutenant.
It does look like it. Anyway, I'll check with the gardener.
The gardener?
Yes, Robert says he was working around the grounds all afternoon. If the gardener's story checks with yours, well, that'll be it. Good night, Miss Germaine.
It was a bad mistake, wasn't it, Alma? In your murderous haste, you dressed Louise in a sunsuit instead of the bathing suit she'd naturally wear. But it will all be all right, Alma. Everything. If only he doesn't know for certain that Louise wasn't swimming in her pool. It seems forever, doesn't it, before the lieutenant is back again.
Well, Miss Germaine, I couldn't reach the gardener, but I talked to the housekeeper over there, Mrs. Ridley. She says the gardener can't be of much help to her.
Oh?
Seems that he was driving Mrs. Ridley and your maid Dora to the movies at 5:00. He couldn't have seen Miss Roberts in the pool when you did.
Well, I see. Then does that mean...
That I'll have to take your word for it? Yes, it does. As far as I can make out, it was an accident, like you said. Sorry to bother you at this late hour, Miss Germaine, but... Thought you'd want to know.
Of course. It's no bother. I'm so relieved. For Neil's sake.
The
Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, a word to you folks who have not yet taken your vacation about an item that will have a lot to do with your driving pleasure. Gasoline. No matter where you travel throughout the Pacific Coast State, from Canada to Mexico, you'll find Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. Almost 2,000 friendly dealer-owned Signal stations stand ready to serve you and to honor your Signal credit card. And remember, when you power your car with Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, you not only enjoy Signal's good mileage, but also the thing which makes that mileage possible, extra engine efficiency, which naturally means more thrilling performance for your car. So, on your vacation trip and always, to be sure of the tops in gasoline quality, just remember these 2 points. One, in gasoline, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. And now back to the Whistler.
And now, Elmer, your expensive little world is safe again. Neil's in the clear now, free to marry you without any interference from his sister. Yes, Louise Roberts is safely dead, and your whole murderous past with her. It was a desperate few hours, but the absence of motive and your one efficient lie convinced the lieutenant that it was a tragic accident, nothing more. That's why you're surprised the next afternoon to find the lieutenant back at the door again, walking in, sitting down in the luxurious house you thought was yours, past all jeopardy.
Well, frankly, Lieutenant, I thought we were rid of you.
I know. I'm funny. The boys at the department rib me about it. Even when I'm sure, I always have to check.
And what are you checking now?
The gardener. I finally caught up with him today.
I thought Mrs. Ridley said...
That part's okay. He wasn't near the pool around 5 yesterday, and he didn't notice the body at 10 when he came back.
Then what's so important?
Very important, because after talking to him, I changed my mind about Miss Roberts' death. It wasn't an accident at all. It was murder.
What are you saying?
Why'd you lie to me yesterday, Miss Germain?
What?
Why'd you tell me you saw Louise Roberts in swimming?
I did see her.
Stop it. You're all finished, Miss Germain. You killed her and put her in that pool yourself. Thought it'd pass as an accident. And you saw her brother and his money slipping away when we put the finger in him, so you tried to cover by saying you'd seen her in swimming.
This is outrageous. I don't know what you're talking about.
Why'd you lie to me? No one but an idiot would have dived into that pool yesterday afternoon.
But why?
Because the gardener changed the water in the Roberts pool yesterday, Miss Germain. And at the time you claim you saw Louise Roberts in swimming, there wasn't a drop of water in the pool.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Wednesday at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you, to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speed, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Betty Lou Gerson and Tom Collins. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen, with story by William Engvick, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was The Girl Next Door, with a fatal swimming pool, or so it would seem. Tonight's tale, twisted tale, of course, as they all were, from The Whistler. Tonight's came from August 20th, 1947. And it's our final foray for old-time radio drama for this Saturday night. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you can be with me tomorrow night from 8 to 11 for more by the glow of your radio, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.